this. All right, we're going live.
All right.
You've been warned.
What could go wrong?
What could go wrong? All right. Welcome to the Growing with Fishes podcast, episode 163. This week we have Jordan Rivers with the Growcast. Thanks so much for joining us, buddy.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Return the favor. You did an amazing job on my show. I really enjoyed speaking with you. So I'm happy to be on your show.
Heck yeah. Always good to help support other growcasters in the community, other people that are as passionate about putting out cannabis education as we are, and other people that are just out there trying to get to these different events and meet these breeders. I think I first met a gentleman from your team over on the up in Portland. We'll get to that a little bit later, but he came up and was just like, hey, I really dig what you're talking about. I'd love to talk to you, do an interview for the podcast that we do. And I always try to support other people and, you know, cross-pollinate audiences and help people learn and grow. So I really appreciate you taking the time to come on. We've had quite the technical issues trying to get you on. I had problems, and we got it worked out eventually.
Yeah, man. And I do appreciate it. You know, with Growcast, we just like talking to people. There's so many different sides of the cannabis industry. And to be honest, I've spoken with a lot of different people now. I mean, I'm sure as you have, just because everyone's so open within the community. But you really are doing something special, man. I would say after talking to everybody that I've spoken to, your little subset of regenerative soil guys, I would kind of put you in that category. You're even in more subset with the aquaponics, but I know you're into the dual root zone stuff and the super soil concept and all that. You guys, when I speak to you, you know, Joshua Rutherford and Colin Bell and Chris Trump, you just make so much sense. You make so much sense that I don't believe that there is any one right way to grow or anything, but I put you up there in the Mount Rushmore of most interesting people that I've spoken to on Growcast. So,
well, I appreciate it. It means a lot, man. It really does.
And aquaponics is even more interesting to me just because it's so, you know, coming from an average grow background, it's so different. It's so unique and seemingly complex, but not really that complex. But yeah, I digress. So yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. Anyways.
Awesome. I appreciate it. We also have Roger, my LGM.
Hey, how y'all doing tonight?
Hey.
You forgot to mention your forum last time before we wrap up the show. You would have mentioned it real quick at the beginning of this one?
I think I actually mentioned the forum, which is ilovegrowingmarijuana.com. And it's not mine, it's Robert Bergman's, but I administrate the forum and do the blog, all the blog answers. And we got over 500 to 600 now articles in the blog. Not near as big as IC Mag, as I found out with Mr. Green Jeans last week, but I've actually been recently partnered up with the Carolina Canna Connection, which is a hemp company. We're hoping to be cannabis one day, but I partnered up with them, and we're trying to build a big farm out here in Carolina. And you know, it's a lot of fun. It's certainly made me a lot more busy. You know, I don't have any free time now. You know, it's crazy, but that's what I'm doing. And, you know, that's about it. Yeah. Thanks, Steve. But yeah, I love growingmarijuana.com. If you want a really friendly, mature place to go and interact with people on a forum where you can share your pictures, that's not Instagram or Facebook. We have a forum based out of hosted in Amsterdam, and we have a genetics lab in Amsterdam, and that's what we do.
And for those of you looking for an alternative for Instagram, big shout out to the guys, JR Token and everybody else over at Cannabuzz. They were on a couple weeks ago. Again, if you're looking for an alternative that doesn't crack down on cannabis industry content, Cannabuzz is a huge supporter of the show. They come out and put, you know, their money where their mouth is and really support the community in ways that other people don't. So if you are looking to, you know, find a community that's more embracing of our people and the kind of content that we do, please go check out Cannabuzz. Those guys really put a lot of work into it. All right. So thanks a lot, Jordan, for joining us. Why don't you tell us about yourself and what you do in your podcast? Because you do a really awesome podcast as well that I know I'm a passionate listener of as well.
Oh, thanks, man. I do appreciate that. I started Growcast almost 5 years ago now, which is crazy to think about. My growing mentor when I was living in Humboldt County, Wolfman, he kind of showed me the ropes and brought me into the cannabis community in Humboldt, which was just such a cool culture. And we were talking every night and we would hang out just to hang out, and we would tell ourselves, all right, no grow talk, you know? and it always turns to Grow Talk. So we said, we better turn on a microphone if we're going to waste our nights like this every single night. And back then, man, there were no grower podcasts. I mean, there was a couple, you know, but it's like just such a blue water market. If you compare it to anything else, it's just such a new field. So we jumped on it, and I was just producing stuff for the longest time, just because it needed to be made, you know, released it when I could, that sort of thing. And really built a good following, just, you know, never really taking too hard of a stance on anything. I know that sounds kind of weak when people are looking for grow advice, but I am a curious person at heart. And I noticed that so many people said that they had the one right answer, but all their answers were different, which means that that couldn't possibly be true. So I just like talking to everybody in this industry, man, from like the vilified CEOs of big nutrient companies all the way to a dreadlocked fellow such as yourself, showing off the locks there. No, I just like to talk to everybody, man, and learn all different styles. And to be honest, there was a time when I was going to drop Growcast and end Growcast because I was struggling so much when it came to the logistics of production and keeping the show going. Because I do have some other projects, and they were starting to kind of pick up steam and have more traction where Growcast was just suffering. And that's when I hooked up with Rob Smith. You said you had the pleasure of meeting one of the people from the team. Well, that's my co-producer, Rob Smith. And man, he was just a guest on the show, and we'd kept in contact for years back and forth. He actually has a product called the Atlas Plant Trainer. Have you had him on your show, Stephen?
Not yet, but I'd love to.
You really should, man. He gives one of the best, he gives the best talk that I've ever seen when it comes to plant support and plant training. And that's his whole thing. And his product, the Atlas Plant Trainer, is really cool. But anyways, that's how we first met. But I brought him on board as a producer, and he completely changed the show, man. Bumped it up to 2 episodes a week, booking all the big guests, going to the events, hooked me up with people like you, all the people that you work with, all the aforementioned regenerative soil guys. And it's just been a wild ride since then. We've teamed up and really taken the show to the next level, and it's never been better. So obviously people can find it everywhere where podcasts are available to be downloaded, everywhere you can procure your favorite podcasts, and YouTube as well, Spotify, growcastpodcast.com. We're just killing it, man. We're loving it. And again, we're just the deliverers of the experts like yourself, right? You're so into your field. Like, no one could know as much about your specialty as you do just because you spend so much time there all the time, you know? So that's my goal is I'm definitely a grower at heart, but I'm more of a podcaster. And that's what Growcast is. It's the Growcast podcast, man. So.
I appreciate that a lot. And it's really awesome to see other people that have the same passion for that. And I'm sure you've noticed too, the more guests you have on, the more like guests recommend you other guests. I know that there's been countless times we've gotten guests like Gypsy Nirvana and some of these other people that are like mystical people online that suddenly appeared on our podcast for the first time or second time in an interview ever. Because, you know, they got a good recommendation from someone else that was on the show that happened to be friends, real good friends with them. And I'm sure you've had the same thing where you've had, you know, a real good time with a guest and they've ended up bringing you other great guests. And, you know, the more good content you put out there, the, in certain ways it gets easier, in certain ways it gets harder. It gets harder to grow the community, but it gets easier to get good guests.
Yeah, that's true. That's totally true. I was just on, I don't mean to be, you know, plugging everybody, but I figured
plug away.
I was just on Shane McCormick's show, Growing With Our Fellow Growers. Have you been on there? I'm sure you have.
I haven't been, but it sounds cool.
Oh, well, let's get you on there, man. Let's do it. It's fun because it's like a really big panel. He has a bunch of people on, and I was intimidated at first. Because there's going to be a bunch of soil scientists and shit. And it's like, Jordan, what do you have to say? Like, what have you been up to? Have you been in Vegas? Like, what's going on? Like, oh man, I'm not going to have shit to say. But it was actually really open and really cool. And after that, I contacted everybody on that panel, and they're all coming on the show, and they're all doing great jobs on the show, and we're all creating value for each other. So it's really cool, man.
I know we've been really good friends with both the Embracing Organics guys and Rasta Jeff. Going back to Rasta Jeff was a guest in one of our first 50 episodes, I think. And then the Dude Grows show. You know, Dude Grows is
what inspired one of the oldest ones. Yeah.
Yeah, me. It's what inspired me and Marty to do the show. Is like we love the format of their show, and it's kind of a little more laid back, a little more goofy, but still educational. and trying to cover that gap of being entertaining and fun and still educational at the same time. And you know, they inspired Marty and I. We got pissed off one night because Marty and I both got angry at being told for the last, you know, 1,000th time you couldn't grow cannabis in aquaponics. And we're like, well, both of us have done this a bunch. Like, let's just post a bunch of pictures, do a podcast, educate people on how to do it. And then there's no more arguing about whether or not it works. It's how well does it work? And you know, suddenly now we change the conversation. And, so cool. And you know what I mean? And that's really why we started this podcast to begin with. And so what inspired with that, on that note, what inspired you to get you started with your podcast? And, you know, you talked a little bit about that on the recording, but like, what was kind of like the nail in the coffin on like, this is what I'm going to do and I'm going to stick with this. Like you talked about, you know, possibly wrapping up the show. What was kind of like the thing that really made you realize like, this is something I need to stick to and be passionate about it and see through, you know, hell or high water? Cause a lot of us podcasters get to the point where maybe we get demonetized by YouTube or we get suspended or we get, you know, kicked in the nuts in some other way. And it gets really demoralizing sometimes, especially with the amount of effort and time you put into the podcast. You know, what was your moment on this is, you know, I'm going to grind through this.
Man, you're a quality interviewer. You should expand your podcast game, man. And that's actually, that kind of plays into my answer, which is, I was lucky to be making a good decision, a positive decision when I was deciding whether or not to continue GrowCast, because I always recommend that people have their hands in multiple pots, man. You got to make multiple bets. And I had multiple shows. And to be honest, I was having success with some of my other shows. And, you know, I gotta pay the bills, and monetization was a big part of it. I was struggling to find guests. You know, I point to monetization right away because that was definitely a big part of it, mainly because I was having success in other areas. But the other thing was, man, I was doing everything myself. That was even before I brought on my editor, to my pro editor. Shout out to Sten from Estonia. I mean, I was doing literally everything myself, man. It was eating way too much time, and it wasn't yielding the results I wanted as far as increased numbers listener-wise, and I was making negative money off the show. I was losing money on the show. That's the thing. And it's like, if I'm making money in this other area and GrowCast wasn't bringing me the same passion as before because it had been so long and I felt tired. Wolfman, who was carrying the show with me, was in the middle of a move. So he wasn't able to pitch in as much as he could. I mean, one of the most generous people I know, you know, gets busy. And it was just one of those moments. And Rob came in at just the right time. And don't mean to dwell on my story too much and, you know, blow too much smoke, but it was perfect. And I feel like it was fate because it's blown up the show further than we ever could have thought. And now we're just killing it. And we're putting out more free content and helping more people than we ever have before. So I'm just trying to keep grinding and do what my producer says, because that guy's smart. And that's also where I work the best, is under guidance like that. So I've been working on a couple different things. Maybe this is a good time to shout out the Coffee, Health, and Science podcast, my newest show. I love medicinal herbs, not just cannabis. And there's a lot of amazing health benefits behind organically grown, high quality, well-produced coffee. So my newest show is the Coffee, Health, and Science podcast. I'm doing that for a company called Purity Coffee. And that was one of the big ones that I was weighing, like, man, I'm getting so much more traction and love with this coffee podcast and suffering from GrowCast. And I knew that it was my fault. It was all because of my lack of skills in certain areas. So I either needed to learn those things, which wasn't going to happen, or bring someone on board. And that's what I did. So I was just very generous with my offer, and it was the best decision I ever made by far.
Awesome. So what are some of the different challenges and things that you've found, you know, doing the podcast aside from the stuff we've touched on? What are some of the, maybe some of the other things for a newer podcaster that should be thinking about in terms of what to go on? Maybe we just move to that question.
It's a great question
for people that are thinking about getting into it, and maybe some of the bigger issues. I know that you and I have both run into a lot of the similar ones.
Well, I'll tell you, man, when it really comes down to it, if I just had to distill it, it's all about relationships. I mean, life is all about relationships, to be honest. But success in any venture is all about relationships. And it points to what I just described. There are a few exceptions, like pure artistic creative expression. But even then, what do you share that with? You have to share that amongst relationships. But yeah, I was putting way too much on myself. That was a big struggle. I thought that I had to do everything myself, and I had to, you know, book the guests and edit the shows and, you know, produce everything and do all the marketing and the social media and all that stuff. I think that if you focus on what makes you happy, what gets you in a flow state, and just kind of practice whatever that is, no matter what that is, practice that, what you love and what maybe you could make money off of one day, while simultaneously cultivating all the relationships you can, all the positive relationships you can, because that's what's going to drive you to the next level. You may be able to find some success by yourself, and there's a small chance you'll find much success, but all the super successful people that I've spoken to in and outside of the cannabis industry, man, it boils down to relationships, giving value, truly giving, not giving and keeping score or giving and sending an invoice later, giving value and seeing what happens out there. I think that karma is kind of blown into like a mystic force, but I think it's much more mathematical than that. And I think that the result of cultivating those relationships by giving is not only success, but more importantly, satisfaction and happiness.
Absolutely. So what are some of the more, on that note, what are some of the more interesting topics or guests or maybe things you've learned on the show? Maybe some of the rabbit holes that you've been introduced to.
With Growcast? Yeah, man. Oh, geez. Well, most recently, Jason Lupoy, Dr. Jason Lupoy from Terpenes and Testing. Holy cow. Terpenes are so cool, man. I'm so fascinated by terpenes. We just did an episode where I said, let's talk about all the crazy stuff they do. And he just really imparted how they do a lot of different things. And I probably, you got to listen to the episode when it drops. Subscribe to Growcast. I'm about to butcher something that a doctor said. But one of the things he said is, you know, they're the plant's tools. They use this stuff as weaponry and defense mechanisms to attract and repel. They don't have limbs and digits. So they use these things as tools. And he just went through all the different terpenes and their medical properties. One of the things that I thought was really cool was they talked about forest bathing and alpha pinene. So people who do this forest bathing where they purposefully spend extended amounts of time immersed in nature in the forest, usually with little clothes on, they actually come back from forest bathing with higher levels of alpha pinene in their blood, supposedly. And it shows all sorts of crazy health benefits, man. I mean, we're talking antidepressants, and it was as if something that the time in nature was as effective as medication for antidepressants and mild antipsychotics. I was speaking with someone on one of my other podcasts that was talking about that. Dr. Joel Wade is his name. It's crazy, man. I was really fascinated by the forest bathing and the alpha pinene. Have you heard about this?
No.
So I was super fascinated to hear about it. And he touched on it even more. And I think that's one of the reasons that cannabis is so popular now in 2019 is we're so confined and separated from nature. We live inside the drywall boxes, you know, that we call the rooms in our houses. And we never get these compounds that could be super important to our mental health. I mean, think about this for a second. So it makes sense that if you can get that little dose of nature in a glass pipe, it makes sense that like that would call to you on a deeper level if you're not getting that time in nature. If you're living in an urban environment or if you spend all day inside podcasting like I do, maybe your body is like yearning for those terpenes that may play a pretty big role in our health and wellness. So
absolutely. The same way that people look at cannabinoids, so, you know, they're just discovering we need to look at terpenes the same way. And the one thing it's a double-edged sword though. And I do want to bring this up because I've run into three clients doing consulting that have had this problem is that we already have an established allergen table for terpenes. We know that lots of people are specifically allergic to D-limonene or regular limonene or pinene or, you know, XYZ or terpenylene. So those are documented in food allergies. Okay. So that's, we know about that, But people don't think about those same terpenes being produced in cannabis and then being introduced. So I've met two people that have been like ultra deathly allergic to limonene that can smoke cannabis but cannot smoke limonene. Now imagine if you're an uneducated cannabis user and you smoked something that had limonene and you were allergic to limonene the first time, you'd think you're deathly allergic to cannabis. Whoa. Even though you might actually need a cannabinoid because you have cancer later in life, or you might have, you know, XYZ cannabinoid deficiency that causes XYZ, you know, medical problem, and think that that's not even an option on your medical, you know.
Whoa. That's super fascinating, man.
But I think that you're going to see, especially as you see the cannabis movement moving into the general population, I think you're going to see more and more terpene allergies that are more common than we realized, you know, because you didn't have that general population, or you have people that are allergic to very specific terpene profiles. As we get better at, you know, honing these in, I think you're going to see that. And then, you know, at the same time, you'll be able to get a blood test, I think, in the next 10 to 20 years that will tell you, you know, avoid these, go after these, whatever, as we get more educated on that. And that's, you know, not now, not even in 5 years, but I think in 10 or 20, I think we'll be able to get there. And we had Kevin Jodry on the show a couple of months ago, and he was talking about how blood tests to figure out what cannabis strains you should get. You know, they could do a blood test to see what endocannabinoids that you're devoid on, and so actually cool. Recommend you cannabis cultivars based on your bloodstream, which is like, you know, ultra forward thinking, and where we'll get eventually. But, you know, that science needs, like, we don't even know all the cannabinoids and terpenes that plant can produce yet, what they do. And then you have, you know, currently there's what, 230 recognized or 238 recognized cannabinoids and 410 terpenes or something like that in cannabis that we know of. And we haven't even combined all of them, not to mention documented all the ones that are, you know, not present post drying or whatever else. You know, there's so much science that needs to be done with this plant. You know, who knows, there might, you know, maybe the cure from cancer only comes from live rosin. You know, we don't know that, but it could, you know, like, that's what's so trippy, is because some of these, you know, cannabinoids and terpenes only exist for, you know, 24, 48, 72 hours because the way they have to be. You know, I have to have this cannabinoid and this terpene broken down into the oxidized state that then combines with one that's not to make a third chemical that happens to cure XYZ or give relief for XYZ or cause a severe allergic reaction. That's also why it's extremely dangerous when you have people adding in terpenes from non-cannabis plants, lavender, you know, all this other shit you get in the vape pens. Not so much in the older markets, but in some of the newer vape pens, they have the added terpenes that from non-cannabis stuff. Well, what, there's zero documentation on what happens when those terpenes break down into their compounds, but then recombine with some of the other cannabinoids and terpenes. And we know for a fact that some cannabinoid groups are deadly lethal. So like it really is a matter of time before someone mixes the wrong stuff and makes something accidentally that tastes and smells wonderful, but, you know, we'll put you in the hospital. And that's crazy, what scares, man, the shit out of me, is especially with people putting in stuff from, you know, other plants. Like it's one thing, we have everything documented with cannabis that says that it's safe. But if we're going to be start combining stuff from outside of cannabis, we don't have any scientific knowledge on that. And that's not a paranoid, like, conspiracy theorist, that's legit science concern that has a lot of science behind it. I mean, look at we talked about this on the show with, was it Kevin McKernan? I think it was, where they did that cannabinoid, or was it Mike West? One of the two of them, they were on the same week. I think maybe it was Mike West, actually. I think it was
Mike. I'm
sure Mike, if you're not listening now, you'll be listening in the recorded version. Shout out, Mike, much love. Hopefully see you before too long. He was talking about how they did that test in Spain with 32 patients. And what was it? 12 of them are permanently injured. 6 of them died. And only one of them had no side effects from a synthetic cannabinoid. So, you know, again, this is really dangerous territory and people need to take it seriously. and there's no regulation behind it, and no one's even talking about the dangers of it, and it scares the shit out of me because we have enough uphill battle. The same reason why I'm super against CBN isolate edibles. CBN isolate edibles are incredible for pain relief. Someone's coming out of surgery or can't sleep and tremendous pain and back pain. That's awesome. Take one. It's also going to be highly abused as a date rape drug that has very little taste and can make someone incapacitated for an extremely long time. The cannabis industry has enough of an uphill battle. We don't need to be known as the next new GHB. You know, this is the kind of shit that we have to have adult, real discussions with. And we've got to stop thinking about profits and go, hey, this could actually bring our whole industry down, or regulatory, you know, scrutiny that we do not want to deal with. And we need to take this seriously and treat it in an adult way and say, hey, look, CBN isolates should be kept in the realm of prescription drugs. I don't think anyone would disagree with that because the potential of abuse is way too high.
That's crazy, man. I've never even thought of that. And yeah, you're right, because I mean, these are potent compounds. This all started with terpenes, you know, like, and like you said, all the different combinations, right? Hundreds and hundreds of different combinations, and also how they change during the process. So you think about, you know, how many combinations 52 cards in a deck can make, and how many different combinations can be made from the 200 and whatever cannabinoids and 400 some terpenes. Yeah, man. And that scares me to hear educated people like you say that, because like, if you're scared, then that gets me scared. So hopefully someone's going to listen to you.
It's the amount of recklessness too. And then the other thing too, so like what's also funny is, so like everyone's heard about like the algae or yeast-based cannabinoid and terpene production, right? Mm-hmm. And how like everyone's going to produce CBGA and they're going to just stop doing it on plants, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's cool and all, like from a scientific standpoint. Here's the problem from a chemistry standpoint. And anyone that's done any cart chemistry is going to immediately know what I'm talking about. When you start combining terpenes and cannabinoids without knowing the exact ratios, they will crystallize, precipitate, emulsify, do all kinds of things that are unpredictable. And in even if you're off by like 0.1%, they can have a radical difference on how viscous the final solution is. And if you're in a vape pen, that can be a huge problem. Depending on what it is that you're trying to go after and the type of device you're trying to use it in. So this is why, like, yeah, they in theory could do that, but the amount of R&D they'd have to do to get to a point where they can document that to have a viable, you know, still liquid product that tastes good and is repeatable, like, they're going to have to spend millions of dollars in R&D to get to the point. Like, if someone has the money, could go for it, but
it's not going to happen. Not as
simple,
right?
It's not as simple as printing these cannabinoids and terpenes out of these microbes and then just putting them together in a petri dish. It doesn't work that way. Like that's what a lot of these bankers, and that's the difference between a banker and an investor and a grower and an extractor. You know what I mean? Like that there's just some things that you're just not going to do. And then, you know, another one that's been a big controversy is like the phylo stuff. Well, the phylo stuff is cool, but they don't know how to make those genes activate to replicate that genome, right? So they don't know what soil conditions and what microbes they were exposed to get that genome expression to make that terpene expression happen.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. Right? They have a lot of the data, they're missing half of the puzzle. They don't they don't have a box, but they have the puzzle pieces.
Wow.
And all the puzzle pieces are black.
Wow, man. I've never heard it put that way. That's really interesting. So they have some sort of guide, but as far as the genetic expressions, they're going to be completely varied depending on if you grew it in a super soil or if you grew it like shit.
Well,
like,
how does that work? Here's a great example. And this is one that I have never shared publicly, but at this point, like if somebody else hasn't stumbled upon this yet, then I'd be floored. But for a great example, if I want to slam my THCV levels, okay. THCV is one of the precursors that helps boost THCV production in a cultivar that will produce it. Obviously, you have to have that prerequisite. Wow. But if you take a cultivar that produces THCV and I water stress that to the point where the plant, every time that I water that plant through its entire life cycle, it wilts first, where I actively shows leaf droop before I water it every single time. That will boost THCV levels, at least in all the research I've done, between 18% and 35%.
Damn.
Fucking huge. But if I'm just studying the genome of a plant that I've done that to, I might see incredible THCV expression. But fuck if you could tell that you needed to do that exact thing.
I see. Wow.
From the genome. See what I'm saying? Like, okay. You would never know. You might go, wow, that genome is the best producing THCV cultivar I've ever seen. And you take a bunch of clones of it and go plant it, and it doesn't do shit because you didn't do the water stressing. And or, you know, it comes up 30% less than mine because you didn't do the water stressing. Now, how do you, you can't read that from genetic data.
Wow.
So this is the reason why you have people that are making grandiose claims to investors, and they're just completely full of shit and don't understand what they're talking about. And it's just, it's if you're educated, it's comical, but it's scary.
Because so much money's being passed around on it.
Because there's, yeah, billions of dollars are changing hands, and it's based on, a lot of it's based on pure bullshit or people's That's lack crazy. Of education on the science of what they're trying to invest in.
That's nuts, man.
And that's just a very simplified example that I think everyone can wrap their heads around. But that's, you know, imagine if your we'll use phylos. Imagine if your phylos, how many different grow conditions do they actually have that were submitted? Thousands, hundreds of thousands, maybe even, you know, and you don't know any of that. So while it's cool and all that they have that, how useful is it really?
That's a really good point, man. Because, yeah, and I've never heard pushback. That's always just been like a horror story, you know, like a cannabis horror story. And you're saying maybe it's not so bad what they have, or at least so valuable what they have. Not so, it's bad what they did, from what I can tell. Oh, but at least maybe it's not super, right.
Yeah, intentionally misleading breeders was horrible. But at the same time, like, they really don't have the treasure chest that they think they have because they're missing half of how to make that genome do what it is that they can see.
It's the growers and the way the method.
They can't replicate it. Yeah, they can't replicate that genome unless they know how to activate all those individual genes. And if you show me a human being that knows how to activate all the, like, I got, you know, I'll sell you, you know, coastside, you know, beachfront property in Denver.
Right. I see what you mean. Yeah. Yeah. That's crazy, man. That phylo shit is crazy.
No, but that's the, like, I've gone through that. Like, anyone who's listened to the show's known, I've covered that phylo situation, you know, as in depth as humanly possible with people that really knew what they were talking about. We had Beth from Open Cannabis Project. We had Dale Hunt. Both of them formerly worked with Open Cannabis Project, which was funded by Phylos and a whole bunch of other people. You know, we had a whole panel of experts on a couple of different occasions talking about, you know, and lawyers and all kinds of stuff, specifically talking about, you know, the whole situation. That was really, once I got finally educated on it and on the science, especially Kevin McKernan, really educated me on how little they actually have. Like, yes, they're a big scary thing, and what they represent and could represent is scary and horrible, and we should react this way. But in practice, they really kind of are they're stumbling around in the dark like idiots, and they don't really have the data that they claim to have because, you know, again, they might have the genome for it, and maybe they can even replicate that, but they can't get that terpene profile to match up and replicate, which, if you can't do that, you don't have anything. Mm-hmm. But that's the other reason why it's so hard to patent chemovars. That's why the chemovar patent for the CBD medication got denied for
Epidiolex.
Epidiolex, yep. Or Epidiolex, whatever
it is. So let me ask you this, man. All this stuff that you just said, in the past four or five topics you've just mentioned, these are all things that worry you or scare you. It seems to me, as a result of the speed of which this thing is moving, the way you slow down the progression and that speed is through regulation, which is not something we really want at this point. We just broke free of that. What can we focus on during this tumultuous transition? Hold on, this is a long-winded question. You've been on my show. You know my questions go longer than that, Stephen. What can we focus on in this tumultuous time that will most ensure that this doesn't turn into a shit show? And may I put up at the forefront, Growcast's maybe number one mission is protecting the home grow laws, the answer to this, so at least we have that back door at all times.
So I think really the best thing for us to do, because I've spent a lot of time talking with Beth Schechter, formerly of Open Cannabis Project, on this exact question. What now? The cat's out of the bag, shit's hit the fan, everyone's panicking. What do we do to protect ourselves? Because I think that's the number one thing. And I think the number one thing is coming together and putting out standardized language that can be used and adopted in everyone's contracts for both consulting, breeding, genetics, and coming up with something like a version of LegalZoom but for cannabis that has like open source language that is very protective of the breeder, that can be shared and just widely mass distributed so everyone can use it, that is also will hold up in court and be good legalese, like done, you know, so that we have something we can hold up, say, hey, oh, you need to protect yourself here. Use this contract. This holds up in court. This has been backed by lawyers, and this will keep you protected as far as we're aware in the current, you know, you can only protect as far as you're aware currently, which is all you can ever hope for, but it's as best as we can probably pull off. And I think by working with a couple of people and finding them some funding and group pooling funding to get some of these documents drafted by lawyer groups is really going to be our way forward. I think if we can set together, you know, a group where we can donate to someone like Dale Hunt and the law firm that he represents, some of the others that are willing to donate a large percentage of time for free, as long as they can at least keep a roof over their head, and for a little bit of money, they'll give you, you know, for 25 hours, they'll give you 100, you know what I mean? Like those kinds of guys are, you know, they're really passionate about it and trying to make a big difference and, you know, putting their money where their mouth is to help us. And there aren't many people out there that do that. So big shout out to Dale Hunt and his firm and all the hard work that they do. If you're looking for a great lawyer that can help you draft stuff, you know, definitely go to him. You know, he's really taken the time. I mean, he's spent 8 hours on this show alone answering people's questions on this kind of stuff. Like, no, lawyers don't do that. Like, you know, come on. So that I think, you know, teaming up with lawyers that care and putting out proper legal documents that can be used as template documents for people's contracts in a way, or sections of contracts that people can copy and paste into their final agreements, that I think is the actionable, easiest way to make the largest impact after putting a lot of time into this. We could rant, rave, we could go to regulations, we could do all this other bullshit, but at the same time, if we have all of the good breeders and all the craft growers and all the people making the good genetics with a standardization of good legal protections, what's the market going to do? They don't have an option. They have to deal with this. And they have to go through our pocketbooks to do it, you know, that we get paid at the end of the day rather than forcing ourselves out.
Nice. I got to ask.
Another part that people don't think about, you know, you could make a great solution, but you might have that great solution push you completely right out. And you don't want to do that either.
I wanted to ask you something now that we're on the subject, because I was just speaking with someone. I do too many podcasts, so I forget exactly who it was, but they were talking about, oh, I know who it was. It was Alan from Strainly, strainly.io. Interesting guy, interesting company. And he was talking about a couple different really cool things. But one of the things he was talking about was, and I'm kind of talking out of my ass here, so I just want to tee you up to see if you know what I'm talking about, because I don't know much about law or genetic breeding, to be honest. But he talked about switching from like a patenting model to a licensing model for growers. Can you kind of touch on that?
Absolutely. So I agree. I couldn't agree more. So the difference between patenting and licensing is a patent means that you have to hold it, use it, defend it, do all this other shit. Whereas with the licensing stuff, it gives you a way to like do all of those things, but like monetize it while you're doing it the whole time. Like in a far easier way than trying to find a single contract.
That seems far simplified. I don't want to be rude on your show, but that seems very simplified.
The other cool thing with the licensing is that like I can license it and say, hey, like I want everyone to grow it except for like Aurora and Canopy and Phylos. Like fuck anybody that works with them, and it can be licensed to anyone else. So you can use it just as like a So you could even patent a strain, license it, and say everyone can use it except for canopy growth, or everyone can use it except for my, you know, my ex-wife's husband's company, or like whatever. It doesn't matter. Whatever stupid, whoever you got a gripe against, you can absolutely legally write that out, and you know, whatever you want to do.
That's legit.
I don't like anyone that wears purple shirts. Like, well, I don't know, whatever it is that you're after.
Interesting. So you're pro, you're for this idea, this
model. Oh yeah. So I think that's our big, because imagine this, right? So like, say I find like the next Charlotte's Web or the next AC/DC or the next whatever, right? And like, I want to be able, and I can patent it, but they could always claim that they had a thing or whatever. But if I have it licensed and suddenly I immediately give it, you know, write quick license contracts and give it to 8 separate breeders, and then they go and try to make some bullshit ass claim. Now I got 8 breeders to back me up and contracts to go with it. So that becomes a much messier legal battle if I have to go defend it in court for them.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So this goes back into putting more, you know, coins in your purse when it comes down to a court battle. You want to be the one with the bigger purse string. So, and this is not talking about financial cash. I'm talking about the ability to back your ass up with paperwork and documentation. So I think that to me is why it makes more sense to do it that way, because if you do get into a nasty court fight, you kind of can go back and say, hey, well, I already have this relationship with all these other dudes that are producing these genetics under a licensed agreement. You know, this guy's violating it. And, you know, that's a pretty simple thing. License agreements for that kind of stuff in other industries is pretty cut and dry. There's established law. There's no bullshit. You know, that it's not treated differently because it's cannabis.
That's cool, man. That's fucking cool. So you're down in Oklahoma. Are you battling it out down there on subjects like this or what?
Oklahoma is basically trying to get people to take the regulatory structure seriously. We have another round of regulatory stuff coming on the 29th and trying to hit people over the heads with the reality mallets on and explaining to people that if you're not in state compliance, that you're suddenly also in federal violation. Having to have that conversation and people just not realizing that like that's a thing, and then just dealing with people that haven't worked in the, like anyone that's worked in the black market, I don't have to tell them that they need to think about every legal liability when they do something at the grow. The people that haven't done that, I've noticed, and doing consulting and working on my own grow, people that haven't had that background will make stupid mistakes or not think about things in a way that in terms of liability, or make really reckless decisions that are not based on liability and not thinking about the legal ramifications because they haven't, they didn't. How do you, and this is, if someone can answer this to me, I will like pay you $100. So here's a challenge. How do I quantify to someone that has never grown in the black market the level of seriousness to someone growing in the white market in terms of like following the paperwork to a T? There isn't. You did it or you didn't. Like it's an emotion, it's not even like a something you can teach. It's something that you did or you didn't. And I don't know how to bridge that gap.
I would suggest maybe mock execution. Well, I wouldn't suggest mock execution. I would suggest not mock execution.
No, but real.
But it might work if you did. So,
Oh, man. And then just in Oklahoma, dealing with people that like don't know they need to turn plants to 12-12. Seen that a couple times. Dealing with like consulting on some grows that had run into Septoria. Septoria is not something we ever run into on the coast. Mm. That's a new disease that I haven't seen before.
Talk about that, would you?
Oklahoma. What's that?
Can you talk about it? Just
sure. So Septoria is a leaf spot that's generally, it's been caused pretty heavily because of the flooding up here. We had so much water and so much flooded fields that it's caused perfect sporulating conditions for the Septoria. So Septoria has been spreading a lot of the hemp growers, a lot of the CBD growers, and doing large scale field crop. I know a guy that has it across 3/4 acre right now. And it's one of those things where if you hit it hard and early, you can mitigate it with Trichoderma and Bacillus pomelis and Bacillus subtilis and Streptomyces. You know, you hit them kind of with a combo and you can beat it back. But if you don't find it, like if you let it progress to a certain point before you realize it, it'll be a vector for fusarium and a bunch of others and lose the crop. So it's one of those things where it itself is rarely like a crop killer, but it will allow secondary infections that can become crop killers. But it's yellow spotted leaf spot. So like if you've done tomatoes or peppers or other or lettuce, leaf spot, it's called septoria. Yellow leaf spotting, generally caused by anaerobic soil conditions or, you know, just ludicrous spore conditions, which, you know, some of these grows were, you know, underwater or, you know, right next to a property that was underwater.
Wow.
So, you know,
that's crazy.
You kind of had the perfect weather conditions for it for months and months and months. And, you know, you can only have that for so long before you run into something.
Nice. That's cool, man.
But yeah, it's just been something I've learned. And then just learning about new beneficial insects, learning what wheel bugs are, learning what robber flies are, learning what stuff that eats other bugs that I've ever run into. But thankfully, you know, it's been so hot, we haven't really dealt much with powdery mildew or black mold, but fusarium and botrytis and septoria, I'm sorry. I've seen quite a few different grows in Oklahoma doing some consulting on the side, just all over, just because of the flooding. I really do think it had to do a lot with the flooding and just having like just genuinely perfect conditions. And then the fact that like how many people in cannabis have run into septoria that was like severe enough to like have to do something about it. Like I've seen septoria one other time in my life in cannabis, and it was so mild of an infection, it was like, yeah, whatever, like it's a little unsightly, but it's not going to hurt the yield, so fuck it, like it's wow. Benign, or at least the one that I saw the first time. So, but yeah, that's been large part of it. And then just dealing with a bunch of people that had no education on cannabis that are diving headlong and, you know, spending $500,000 or $1 million on a facility without knowing the need to put the plant 12-12.
Wow, man, your life must be crazy. I'm so jealous of where you're at, man. I have to admit, you're like, I'm jealous of your like cannabis lifestyle, going from grow to grow. These people are crazy jumping into this. Why are they jumping in? Do they see dollar signs? Are they passionate? When I talk to people, I try to stay optimistic. They seem passionate. They seem like the CBD helps someone in their family. They also seem like they want to get rich. But I'm cool with that, man. I get it. This is America. But I see passion in these people. Why are they doing what you just described?
There's two reasons I've seen over and over and over again. One, like you're saying, a family member that's had a life-changing event that's really made a big impact on, that's probably 20 to 30% of them. The other 70% of them are farmers that have been kicked in the teeth by Trump or the oil industry crash. That are looking for another income source. Like one of those two things, either the oil prices having gone down significantly in the last 2 or 3 years and the oil jobs kind of drying up, and then these guys having lots of farmland, and then the tariffs. These guys get like soy and stuff, these guys are fucked. So they're trying to find, they see this as like a really cash crop, like a huge cash crop to them. And they're great farmers. They're really good plant growers. They just know nothing about cannabis, and they're treating it like a tomato or a pepper because that's what their farm buddy told them, and failing miserably in some cases. Other guys are crushing it. Like some of the guys are just doing really well. There's a couple of guys I met out in Oklahoma City that are country bumpkins, first time growers, and actually took a little bit of education, and they're killing it, man. Like some of these guys are really doing great. Like I don't want to be thinking that, you know, or speaking that like everyone's negative out here and doing bad. Like that is not at all the case. But definitely I would say there's more people doing it wrong than doing it right. I would say that.
That's wild, man.
But I think you're going to see like every other state that legalizes, you're going to see 60 to 70% of these people either bankrupt or not utilizing their licenses after the first year.
Jeez. Talk to me more about this first harvest. Like I know there are people who are praying that their THC levels are low enough, or at least that's what I read. I don't know if that was just a headline, but you know, like what is this first harvest going to show? Is there going to be a big surplus? What's going to happen to the market?
So one, I think the same, like going back to what I was saying earlier about the Septoria and the Fusarium, I think you're going to, especially now that state testing starts on the 29th, you're going to see, I would say 40% of the stuff that's submitted from outdoor, maybe even 60% of the stuff from outdoor failing testing or more, and then finding its ways to nearby states, I'm sure, through one way or another. I think that's going to be the biggest thing. I think you're going to see a ton of people that grew a lot of weed that is unsellable in white markets. I think that's going to be the biggest thing. I've seen so many. Right now, we have a dispensary down in Glenpool called Kind Alternative, if anyone wants to come down and check it out. We have people bring us weed all the time. We reject 90, 95% of the stuff that comes through that door. Most of it's not cured. We have stuff that's moldy that gets brought in on a regular basis, stuff that's just, people don't know what they're doing. Like, they're growing weed, harvesting it. It looks good to them, but they don't know what they're looking at. They're bringing it in and it's like, oh my God, get this out of my store.
That's crazy. You have someone whose job it is to tell 19 out of 20 people your bud has mold, get out of here. And they're like, what the fuck, man? That's gotta be a brutal job.
But we also, so if they don't have terpene and cannabinoid testing, we've been doing terpene and cannabinoid testing day one. If we have a pound and it's fire, we'll get it tested in-house, and then they're not in-house, but by a third party, we'll test it through the dispensary by a third party company and then post that. So every single thing in our store is full terpene and cannabinoid profiles. We're one of the only stores in all of Tulsa that has, full terpene and cannabinoid profiles for the whole product line, whereas most stores don't. And you're just focusing on that quality. It really is the way to send out in the market, especially in the newer markets. Just go in and treat it like it's Oregon, treat it like it's Canada, and ignore everyone else's bullshit.
Do you find anybody is leveraging the organic label? I was recently in Vegas and I saw that there's a couple companies that claim that they're fully organically grown cannabis products. And I'm thinking that could really be a big selling point and be the next, hot thing if we can popularize it. Do you see that anywhere?
No, that's really the more mature market thing. Having gone through a bunch of different markets, I've gone through Colorado, California, Oregon, Jamaica, and Canada's legalization movements now. And it's more of a mature market thing. Like, you're not going to see that. Like, right now, like, good luck selling diamonds. Like, try to explain to diamonds to like a 60-year-old grandma and like that she needs to go buy a dab rig. Good luck with that. Like, not like straight up, like, yeah. I'm gonna break out a blowtorch and show grandma how to use a dab rig. It's not gonna happen. So you have this, like, there isn't an appreciation for high-end concentrate. There are for, there's this 5-10% of us that appreciate it and know what we're talking about, but the consumer market is light years behind in the middle of the country and on the East Coast. Your consumer education is so much poorer that you're not, how am I supposed to explain to a lady she's going to spend $20 more for an eighth or $10 more for an eighth because it's organic and whatever else when she's a conservative?
Yeah.
Not toting person who thinks the climate control or climate change is a hoax. Like, good luck with that. Like, again, it's just wrong market. Like, it's not, maybe in Oklahoma City, but not in Tulsa. Like, Tulsa is definitely a more liberal market than Oklahoma City in a lot of ways, socially. But it's not, again, going back to consumer education, it's going to be 2 or 3 years before that people are really demanding that.
Not too long. I mean, that seems like a long time now, but I feel like that stuff happens fast. And like you said, always blows out from the urban areas, right? Like, that's where this sort of thing popularizes. And I think it moves relatively, if you think relative to history, it moves pretty quickly. So in a couple of years, hopefully that'll be more popular. And hopefully that trend is on the rise. Like, the speed at which that it spreads will increase, I hope, as it becomes more and more cool. I mean, Amazon just bought Whole Foods, right? It's like, it's getting big, man. It's like, it's in the news, I feel like.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And so. I really do think, and that's one of the reasons why our dispensary, we have a whole back section for education. It's not finished yet, but we have a whole stage and everything set up in the back. We're going to have a consumer education because that's what's the number one enemy of our industry. What's the number one enemy of the dispensary? Education. So if we can bring people in and give them free free education, you know, at a place where they could buy something at the end of the thing if they decide to. But that's the best way to do it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, if you had a dispensary you could go to get seminars from really awesome people, why would you go to a different dispensary?
That's really cool, man. I like it a lot. I like that you're deep in it. Like, you're, let's just say, you know, you probably don't look like the average Tulsite. I mean, you must stand out. You're just down there just accepting everybody as they are and kicking it and trying to do your best to educate people. I love that, man. Let me just say that.
I will say it's a little bit funny. The only heated conversation I've had so far with any of the Southerners, trying to convince this guy that using KNF methods would mitigate his soil crop, his soil problems post-flood, was pretty entertaining. This guy was really angry at trying to convince him that labs, like using fermented milk, was going to make a big difference. And he told me I was fucking crazy. You know what I was talking about? I should take my bullshit back to California. I was like, dude, there's science to this. Like, not a little science, like a lot of science. Like, come on, man.
Did you get through to him?
Oh, he apologized the next day and he took 20 gallons of labs. So I don't know if he used it or not, but he took the lab.
That's really funny, man. That's a good story. But you did answer my question. You seem to just be, why don't you just stay home like all the other growers and bitch about everyone else's philosophy is wrong and not try to help people? I like your method better. I'm being facetious.
Well, so I could sit around and say I get really angry at like the religion of organic versus the science of organic.
I've gone on. Wow.
So the first time I ever spoke to a big soil crowd, I spoke, and I won't mention who it is because I think he's even been on the show and I don't want to speak ill of him, but there's a gentleman I spoke before me and I was at this big soil conference. I won't mention, I'll leave it all anonymous, but this big soil conference, and I was the only non-soil guy, and this guy went up and basically said, like, anything that isn't soil is blasphemy. And I was like, I came on after him and I was like, I'm going to convince you guys that of the impossible. I'm going to attempt to convince you guys more to organics, just soil. And the half the room laughed. And then I did my whole spiel and I realized, like, we actually have way more in common than we don't. And that we're both doing these super probiotic, you know, microbially dominated methods, especially with aquaponics. So, you know, I'm not going to speak on hydro, but on aquaponics, we do everything. Like, we treat our water the way that those guys treat their soil. Like, we're trying to get all these microbes to grow in our water. It's just, it's not soil. It's aquatic soil. So that's the only difference. And the more I learn from them and the more I interact with the soil guys, the more I adapt methodologies. Even if I don't take the same microbes or do the exact thing, same thing, I'm thinking about how I can do that same type of microbe replication or microbial boosting or using those things in a way to stimulate terpene production or whatever in that same kind of methodology. So I'm really grateful for that soil crowd. But at the same time, there's a lot of people that preach certain parts of organic that are just bullshit and just done for the sake of tradition with no science to them and nothing to back them up. And just like the fact that people say organics has to be connected to the earth because of like whatever frequency or other, dude, come on, that's all bullshit. You know that, I know that. The earth does not have a magic frequency of XYZ bullshit that was invisible to all of us. Scientists would have recognized it by now with all the electronic software, all the sensory equipment, all the Wi-Fi and everything else. We would have figured it out or disrupted it to the point where it affected plant growth, one or the other. So we can discount that. Right.
So you think the problem is the dogma.
Yes, the dogma. Yes. Whereas that's what's really nice about Joshua Rutherford and his conference and the speakers that he runs is that he brings people on that are the science end. You know, Elaine Ingham, Susan Mainwright Evans, Chris Trump, people out there doing the science on this stuff that know what the hell they're talking about and then aren't full of shit and aren't just making stuff up because it feels good. And because, like, I don't know, some hippie told them on the top of a mountain, like when they were in California, like, like girls putting period blood on plants. No, don't do that. I've seen that happen times with girls in California putting period blood on their plants. Okay, first off, let's explain why that's stupid. Like, aside from the biohazard part, let's explain why the chemistry is stupid. Iron from blood is going to immediately oxidize when exposed to air, oxygen, and become Fe3, which is not usable by plants. It's not even plant beneficial. You're just doing it and making your plants smell bad.
That's brutal.
Don't do that.
Not gonna lie.
This is the kind of organic hippie bullshit.
That's the perfect time to introduce the new guest.
I have a question time. Great time to talk, right? I came in perfect time to talk about, yeah.
And to argue with Stephen, to argue the other point we now have.
Counterpoint.
Okay, so I do have a question though. They do talk about giving blood meal. So what's the difference between blood meal and blood? Some people might know that.
Blood meal has been cooked down in a furnace, and which breaks down a lot of the different compounds and allows you to still have some Fe2 left. It gets processed significantly differently. One of them is, you're not bringing them up to high temperature. I mean, in theory, you could take a bunch of tampons and cook them if you wanted to be a weirdo, but.
So
Some feminist dispensary co-op in San Francisco or something.
But I have heard of them like actually taking like cow's blood or goat's blood if they've butchered something and pouring it into the soil and it's supposed to feed the soil. So it's completely
nothing. No, that's bullshit.
Well, that's good to know. Thanks. Cheers, everybody out there, by the way. And nice to meet you, Jordan. I'm Tara.
Hi.
Hi, Roger. Hi, Steve.
We've held you for about an hour and 15. You need to get rolling or?
I've got a little bit longer if you'll have me. I got 15 minutes here.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I'm
having a lot of fun. I was worried that I like made an off-color joke earlier and I was worried that I was going to, but it seems like this is good. We're talking about slaughtering animals. We're talking about, period blood. This is really, now you got a good title for the episode. That's good SEO, if I'm not mistaken.
Covering our bases, then.
Full circle. It's regenerative, full circle.
Full cycle, if you will.
Hey, can y'all hear me now?
Full cycle, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm going full cycle, can you hear me now?
Oh my God, the plant man is back.
The thing is that all of a sudden my mic went out every time I tried to say something. Y'all just talked over me and I finally figured out you can't hear me at all. All right. You guys are too nice of guys to go, screw him. We'll just keep talking when he's trying to say something. And then I said, remember earlier, sorry, I don't mean to screw up the podcast. Been a great show. I've actually got to listen to the whole thing.
I felt bad. I was going to say something. I was like, I feel like Roger's really quiet, but I don't want to butt in. And I saw the chat was going off. So I just stayed back. I'm sorry.
No. Y'all did great. Because I like it when you said it too. And I liked it when you called out Steve earlier and you said, hey, I got longer questions. And then, Steve had a longer answer too. I saw that Steve got you back in the answer too.
That's how I do it. Long-winded. Yeah.
That was cool as shit. All right. So what I had to do is unplug everything and I'm going through my laptop and I used to hate that because I can't get it as loud. But
we had a question.
Are you looking at questions in chat, brother?
Yes. Yeah, would you take a clone from a female plant that hermaphrodites that would the clone be, oh yeah. Okay. Would you take a clone from a female plant that hermaphrodized? What would the clone be? The clone would also hermaphrodite. If those genetics are predisposed, and just to get into that a little more, so cannabis originally, before humans started fucking with it, was always hermaphroditic. Humans actually selectively bred cannabis out to be a sexed plant. There's genetic evidence for that. Going back at least 14,000 years, that humans are responsible for that change. That's why, and that has not happened. And Southeast Asian cannabis in particular was not cultivated anywhere near as long artificially as other ones. That's the reason why you see like in Thai varieties, Cambodian varieties, Indonesian varieties, they tend to hermaphrodite significantly higher rates, way higher rates, because your Southeast Asian stuff was not cultivated anywhere near as long as stuff from the rest of Asia and Europe, because they used it so much more heavily for sales and boats and cargo and transport and just commerce. Whereas Southeast Asia, they used palm leaves for a long time, and there was other plants they used that wasn't cultivated as long. The genetic stability of that is not the same. So that's actually the reason why you have that. But hermaphroditic traits are actually a result of that plant trying to prevent local extinction. The plant, if it's a female and lives too long, it knows its life is pretty short, so it wants to produce female pollen so that it doesn't go extinct regionally. So that's the whole purpose of that mechanism. But humans are the reason why it actually doesn't herm in the first place.
Yeah, because back in the day before humans were interjecting or screwing it up, like you said, it grew naturally. Just grew naturally. The only way it would live was to be hermaphroditic, so.
Yep. No, it originally had a perfect flower, and humans have selectively bred that out for the most part.
Yeah.
I love that, man. I love learning cannabis history. It seems like you're pretty well versed on it. Can I ask you something?
Sure.
So we know that. Well, let me ask you, genetically, have we found out where cannabis originated? Where? Because I know our oldest evidence is in Europe, supposedly with the Czech rope, but genetically, No.
It actually predated that far farther back.
I meant as far as evidence, but yes.
So okay. Genetically, they traced it back to the steppes of Tibet.
Right. That's so Mongolia, China, the Russian steppe, right?
Yeah, that's where it started, and they think it came down then through the Silk Road or, some similar type of trade route back in the day down into Europe.
Understanding as well via the horse people like the Scythians and all their ancestors and all that. So here's my question to you. All those years ago, so many years ago, the Bering Strait was still a thing. You know what I mean? You could walk from Asia to North America, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
All the cannabis history I read is that cannabis didn't come to America until fucking white people brought it. And I don't buy that.
There's an exception to that.
Yeah, I don't buy it either.
There's an Aztec temple. There's two separate Aztec temples, if memory serves me correctly, that actually where they found cannabis and content. And there's also, they found cocaine, or not cocaine, but coca leaf residue.
Whoa.
In Egyptian tombs, and they think that there could actually have been an African South American trade route that was trading plants in particular because they found traces in tombs of those separate plants in places that are where previously they were thought to have not. There was the Anunnaki. What's the ones that used to live that had the giant stone heads in South America? They look like black people.
Yeah, I think the Anunnaki are the lizard people, so I'm not sure if it's them.
Anunnaki.
I don't know.
No, Arawak are the native Jamaicans. Joe Rogan talks about them on his podcast, but there's a civilization that predates the Aztecs and the rest of them by a long time, way, way long. And they have these giant heads that they carved, but the heads have features of an African person. So what they think is highly likely, there's not a whole lot of geological evidence, but it could be that there was African people that came over on boats,
of course,
that then traded or went back and forth a couple of times. We have some biological evidence in terms of plant material, but beyond that, we don't have a whole lot of archaeological evidence, but we do know that there was plants that were traded that weren't supposed to have been traded for another 3,000 years, and we have the evidence for it. So clearly crazy, it happened.
Man. That's so fascinating.
It could have been aliens. They came down and put their spaceship, aliens.
Yeah, that's definitely optional.
You brought Egyptians into the equation, and the pyramids were built by, aliens.
Says the plant man.
According to some people. Hi Tara. I couldn't say hi earlier, by the way.
You do have that coral, that was it, the coral castle in Florida, and the guys claim to have discovered the knowledge of the Egyptians, and there is well documented government documented evidence the gentleman moved an entire castle made of coral in one night, and that has been documented by the local police department.
What?
Well, I gotta say too, as another theory, birds have always flown everywhere, and birds are the reason we get stuff. Storms are the reason we get things, you know.
Right.
We can talk about the humans being able to walk from USA to, you know, to, or America to Russia, or from wherever the any of the Bering Strait or whatever. But you can also have to consider that birds will fly continental, you know. So if they come and poop in an area and it starts growing cannabis, you know, then the, like the Aztecs or something discovered it in the woods growing hermaphroditically, you know, and free, you know, and maybe that's how, it, you know, I'm just throwing another.
No, for sure. I think and that's absolutely right. And I think I misspoken, said straight when I meant landmass, but regardless, that's a good point. I just really never bought that. When you look at every cannabis history timeline, and then it's like, and then they brought it over, which I'm sure they also did, but I just can't, I have such a hard time believing that it wasn't here already. And we just don't give ancient people enough credit, man. They were so smart. They were so much smarter than we were. Because if you took one of us and you swapped us with them, they would learn how to use an iPhone in about 3 hours flat. And we would die trying to make a fire by ourselves. And I think that we've really lost sight of that. And we give these people no credit. All they didn't have any of the distractions we have. All they did was sit around and think, how can I take this low THC plant and actually get a fucking high out of it? And they figured that shit out. And I don't believe anybody who says otherwise.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree 100%.
I like that idea too, because when somebody puts a time limit on it, I just don't buy that. I love it though. See, I got to say this to you, Steve, that you said a while ago. That's the first time I heard the 14,000 years, because people are still trying to say it's only so many thousand years old. And I'm saying, I just don't believe that.
Cannabis, as far as they can tell, they traced the genetics back 2.2 million years or something like that on the
gene. Well, I got a secret for all you Christians out there. God created cannabis.
Well, no. So if you want to go into the Jesus thing, like the original Hebrew translation is the oil anointed one for Jesus, and the oil they referred to as Canan oil, or it's K-A-N something or other. It very well could have been mistranslated to the cannabis oil anointed one, which, you know.
Canna, spelt in the Latin, is K-A-N-E-H.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and that's,
so if you just said K-A-N, it's kind of, there's a thing going on there.
Anyway, so Jesus was the cannabis oil anointed one.
Right. Yeah, I've heard that as well, that it was an ingredient in the holy anointing oil.
When somebody says, what would Jesus do? Whipping out whips and chains and flipping tables is perfectly an acceptable option.
It's legit. This has been great. I should probably run though. This is a good pause because I figure I got to take a second to say my thanks and stuff, man. This was really, really fun. And I'd love to come back anytime you'll have me.
Heck yeah. And tell everybody about your podcast so they can find out more about yourself and listen to more about what you do.
Okay, here we go. Growcast podcast. Find us everywhere. Spotify, iTunes, do all that. We have a membership program that's really cool. You can get 2 free episodes of Growcast every week. But if you're just hooked and you can't get enough, we have a membership program with additional content and live streams and all this fun stuff. So check that out, Growcast and Growpass. And then I'm in the process of launching, iTunes is now approving, the Coffee, Health, and Science podcast. It's currently available on YouTube. If you're watching on YouTube right now, it just posted like last week. So it's fresh. There's no views. Go check it out. Subscribe. Help me out. Let's get this going. And then once it launches on iTunes, we'll go for a bigger push. But that one's incredible, man. If you love learning cannabis science, you will love learning coffee science. The healthy stuff, the organic stuff is very, very good for you. And there's some incredible research. And I'm interviewing Harvard doctors and all this cool shit. What else? The Mastering Happiness podcast with Dr. Joel Wade. If you want to improve your life, learn how to be happier, check that out. If you're going through some tough stuff, you need some help with self-esteem, limiting beliefs, the Mastering Happiness podcast with Dr. Joel Wade. And yeah, just keep doing what you do, Stephen. It's like a pleasure to speak with you. I wish that we were closer geographically so we could hang out. Let me just put it that way.
Awesome. We'll have to get you on again sometime.
Please. And I want to hang out with Roger because he was like chilling as the silent plant man, just like watching the show. which was cool. I felt like it was a good effect, but next time we'll talk back and forth more. Okay.
Yeah. 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 We'll get the parameters of the logistics of this new software that we're using straightened out. I mean, like I said, I'm going to do a separate thing. Well, I won't go on that, you know, but yeah, it was great hearing you tonight. You got a lot of, you're really motivational, I got to say. And I also have to say you have an aggressive way about you. So I appreciate that, because when I get going, I'm fairly aggressive myself when I get going.
I like it, man. We'll hype each other up. You know what
you're talking about? And it sounds like you really have done a great job. I have never seen your podcast, but I will definitely watch some episodes now. I'll go cherry pick a couple guests maybe, you know. Yeah, I can't wait to see you again or meet up with you. You know, if you ever take a if you ever come to the East Coast, I think I'm going to be here for a while, the way things are going. I wanted to go out west, but things are going good in the East right now.
Man, I'll keep that in mind. Tara Lee, it was great talking period blood with you.
Hi, you know what? Perfect timing. I was actually here, but I forgot to turn my camera on. I was sitting here listening. I was like, oh, my camera's not even on. Yeah. So, but yeah.
No,
so
it was great.
Where are you from, Jordan?
I am in Portland, Oregon right now.
Oh, no shit. I'm in Washington. Yeah. I was just in Portland. I was down at the cannabis thing. What the hell? Indo Expo. I was just there.
I miss all the stuff because I'm like a hermit in my studio producing podcasts. But check me out, and maybe we'll run into each other or on the show or reach out. Let's coordinate.
I'm headed up to Hempfest.
Oh, all right. Right on. Yeah, maybe we'll run into each other. And thank you all. This has been wonderful. I'm excited to come back.
And that was Mr. Jordan River, everybody. Back to Steve.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye, Steve.
Good night, brother.
All right. How you been doing, Tara? How's it going?
I'm exhausted. I've been working my bum off all day. I've been outside. It's been hot. I've been bending over cannabis plants because they're getting too tall and I want to keep them down so they're manageable. I am dealing with a little bit of aphids. Knock on wood, I'm keeping everything else back. We're like getting some more predatories in next week. I just hopefully pulled the last male out of my garden today. Hopefully, okay? Hopefully, because I really, really, really want this one to be a boy. I really want this one to be a girl. This last one needs to be a girl. But yeah, so other than that, I got one that a volunteer one that I was letting grow just to see how tall I could get it. I was not going to harvest it. It actually got taller than me and we had to dig it up because we had a tree that broke and we had to take it down. And my husband's like, honey, we really don't need the neighbors and everybody seeing your cannabis plant right by that tree. So he made me take down. So I dug it out, but I put it in a pot. So we'll see if I can get it any taller and bigger. I just want to try it. The stalk's like this big on it already. So I just want to try it. What the hell? What else am I doing? Oh, I have baby chickens. My mama just hatched like 11 baby chicks. Oh. I'm having two more moms that are sitting, one that has two and the other one that's going to be hatching any day. So I have been busy running around with baby chickies and trying to make sure their, you know, beds are all clean and the eggs are all cleaned out and, you know, that regenerative farming so I can have that good manure for my good cannabis plants and my garden. So yeah, my geese are doing good. I have a baby goose. I have, you know, the whole farming thing. I just love it. And my husband, I love my husband. He supports me so much. And he isn't going to go with me to Hempfest. He's decided I'm going to Hempfest by myself. So whoever's going to Hempfest better come find me because I want to hang out and have fun. This will be the first time to Hempfest. yeah, that's it. That's about it. I can't think of anything else.
You sound like you're losing your voice.
No, I think it's the dust. And I was in the chicken coop. And I put some new that straw shaving stuff down. So I think it's got my throat a little bit. Take a drink of my kombucha. Coconut lime. I love this flavor. It's like my favorite. So what's everybody else doing? How are you doing, Roger? What's going on with you?
Well, Well, getting ready to. Well, actually, the first thing that's happening to me is tomorrow I'm going to Bristol and we're going to watch go to the NASCAR race Saturday night. But moving on, because this show is not about NASCAR racing, but we'll do that. But it's good to see you. I hadn't seen you in a couple shows, so it's really good to see you tonight. I'm glad Steve got to you first so you didn't have to check out or anything like that. We're working on the getting the all the the logistical issues dealt with to get serious about starting this big outdoor farm on the island out there. And we're continuing to build the lab, the indoor labs, where we're going to try to prove to the owner of the farm that an indoor greenhouse, climate controlled, you know, if you want to make edible, like, or smokable hemp type, you know, things, that it's better, you know, on total control, or just in greenhouses where they're trying to grow it out in the field, and we're working on them for that, because it's not corn, and there's still people out there that feel like there's a, you know, that if you got a 300 acres and you planted corn for years, that now you can plant hemp, and you can if you want to make rope, you know. But if you want, you know, in my opinion anyway, I could be wrong, but I believe if you want to make a smokable hemp where you get that taste and all that we're all talking about, Josh is talking about, this has been something that's going on. It's actually in the stores here. I can't believe it. But anyway, working on the farm and there's a couple different locations, and we're trying to do that. Vegetable garden's going great. I don't know. It doesn't seem like it's getting cooler, but maybe it's because the light's getting shorter. I don't know. Probably the photo period, but all my produce is starting to, you know, my first totally organic natural farming produce is doing great, you know. And I don't know, I got so much going on today that was negative. It was hard to think about it when you asked me. Thanks for asking. I'm really happy though.
So what's Steve got going on? What's Steve up to these days?
Working on getting the farm going. We're just dealing with the outdoor stuff. You know, we're in full swing with the outdoor. We had 582 plants, or started with 582 plants before we started pulling a few males and a few others that we just decided to whack for XYZ reason. You know, maybe we didn't look quite right, or we, you know, if we suspect anything's viral, or we suspect anything could be contagious, you know, you know, with 582 plants, they ain't worth risk in the field.
Color.
Yeah, I mean, we can cut some more clones and I can put five clones there, six clones there in that same pot. Still, maybe I'm not going to get the same weight as the original plant, but yeah, it's not a zero either. You know, I can at least recoup the loss. So it's been doing that, and then just waiting on, right now we're waiting on the sump building to be constructed. I think that comes on the 22nd. Shout out to Tara Lee's husband. I think our brew tanks will be here on the 22nd, or shipping the 22nd, I forget which one or the other. Thanks to her husband. If you're looking for tanks or plumbing stuff, hit up Tara, support her husband. He's an awesome guy, supports the community.
I talked to them. We're going to be in the market for some of them brew tanks too, if it's possible, because of the logistics of west to east. Sorry, Steve, but
no, you're good.
Happy with that. I like those too.
Other than that, just trying to get everything squared off, and then worried, making sure we're trying to get all of our regulations, make sure all of our I's are dotted and our T's are crossed. We have a new set of regs coming in on the 29th. So we got, you know, the rest of the month basically to make sure that we're going to be compliant. You know, once the new reg, we're compliant now, but once the new regs go through, we're making sure that we're going to still be compliant, which is always scary, you know, anytime you have a big rule change. So just going through that, trying to hold everyone's hand through that whole transition. And I have some new stuff I'm working on. I'm not allowed to talk about yet, but it's bigger than anything I've worked on to date. You guys are gonna lose your shit when you guys see who we're working with and all this other stuff. So real excited about that, and when I'll be allowed to talk about that, hopefully in September. I don't know. Yeah, I gotta ask them that.
Well, cool. So do you know anybody's headed up to HempFest? You need to hook me up.
What's that?
Do you know anybody headed up to HempFest? You need to hook me up.
No, but if anyone's headed
I know
out,
JR Token's gonna be here.
Hell yeah, JR's
yeah, so people, I'm gonna try and definitely meet up with him. I talked to him about the Cannabuzz and I signed up for it. I'm finally on Cannabuzz.
If anyone's going out to the Oklahoma City High Times Cannabis Cup next weekend, I'll be out there.
Oh, is that next weekend? How fun, yeah. Steve.
Yep, that'll be a lot of fun. Get to see a lot of, meet a lot of the Oklahoma peeps and see some old friends. Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun. So.
How fun.
All right. Well, on that note, I'm going to wrap things up a little early tonight. I got to get going.
Sounds great.
My hands full. So we'll catch you guys later. Thanks a lot again for coming on the show. And Jordan, be sure to check out the GrowCast. I've been on there and twice, and I know they've covered some other aquaponic cannabis growers. I know they did interview Mason over at Cold Creek and some other cool places. So they're big supporters of our community. So definitely go check them out. And thanks a lot. Why don't you tell everybody how to find you, Tara?
I am Tara Lee Live on YouTube and on Instagram. You can find me there. And I'm going to be planning on going live this weekend at HempFest. So you better ring that bell.
Awesome. How about you, Roger?
Well, I'm going to be changing hats now. This is our new company, Carolina Canna Connection, and it's it's a hemp company with a license here in South Carolina, and we're going to be we got some associations going on, which I'm getting ready to go to a meeting next week. And as usual, there's sometimes you can't talk about everything, but yeah, you can find me at Carol. We're building a website. That's why I wanted to bring that up first, actually. Carolina Canna, Kaneh Connection. We'll be, we have a website, but it's not built yet. I'm going to be building a website in the next couple of weeks when I get back from the races this weekend. But you can find me at ilovegrowingmarijuana.com, Roger Latewood at Instagram or Facebook.
Awesome. That's good. You can find me as always, Potent Ponics, at YouTube, SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify. And we'll be back again on Tuesday with another great guest. Thanks a lot for everyone listening, and we'll catch you guys again soon.
Great show. Thanks.